Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Today is Wednesday, January 15th, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues for our weekly class in Parshat HaShavua, this week Parshat Va'era. And in Parshat Va'era, we begin to hear about the plagues, about the makot that the Egyptians were punished with by God. And I'd like to discuss with you an interesting question about whether or not the Jews, the Hebrews, if we want to be more precise, were affected by the plagues, or were they not affected by the plagues? This is an interesting debate, and I think brings up some interesting theological or religious questions. Could one of you just shut the door behind you if you don't mind? Oh, hello there. How are you? Okay, so we just started. Have a seat. There are source sheets floating around.
Elaine said she wants to sit next to you.
Okay, great. I have a seat for you, Elaine. All the way from Bell Harbor. Elaine Shane.
Hi, dear. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too. Okay, so that's the question, and we'll see an interesting debate. Let's start. Are there source sheets floating around, extras? Let's start, actually, we're going to go back to page 2. I put the sources in out of order accidentally. Let's start with page 2, which is a midrash from Bereshit Rabbah, Tet. It's actually Tet Yud, number 9, midrash number 10, which definitely takes a position on this question. So this is page number 2. Flip it over if you want.
Oh.
Right there. Okay. Anyone having trouble finding it? Page number 2. Yeah. The question is, were the Jews affected by the Makot, by the plagues in Egypt, or not? Okay? So, we have the Midrash here, and Moshe and Aaron did so as the Lord commanded, and the fish that were in the river died. Right? This is the first Makah. This is talking about the first plague of Dam. And so the Pasuk says that the fish died. Okay. Rav Avin, the Levite, the son of Rabbi, said, the Israelites became wealthy from the plague of blood. Okay? That's an interesting suggestion. How did that work? How was that? If an Egyptian and an Israelite were in one house where there was a barrel full of water, and the Egyptian went to fill a pitcher therefrom, he would discover that it contained blood, but the Israelite would drink from water from the same barrel. So this indicates what? In answer to our question? Right, that the Hebrews were unaffected by at least the makah of blood, at least the makah of dam. Yes, Sonny?
But it's specifically in there that the slaying of the firstborn, the Israelites were supposed to put on the doorposts blood,
right,
to signify that this was the house of Israel, Hebrew,
right,
and that the angel of death
excellent
would pass over.
Okay, good.
So if you had to, for that play, do something special to signify that this was a Hebrew, wouldn't it also apply to these other?
Okay, things? That's a really good question. So Sonny is marshaling textual evidence and suggesting that when it came to the, well, he knows when it came to the plague of Makat B'charot, of the slaying of the firstborn, we know that the Jews were spared, but not automatically, right? They were spared if they put the blood on their doorpost, right? So maybe there also had to be some other indication for all the other plagues in order to spare the Jews. But that's a very interesting suggestion, although it is not it's not what we find in the text, right? We only find that in the text of Makat B'charot, which may lead someone to believe that the Jews, in fact, were affected by all the plagues, except for Makat B'charot, because when it comes to the slaying of the firstborn, they were given explicit instructions on how to escape being affected. The problem is that's not going to stand up to some explicit verses in the Torah. So we have a little more work to do. Yeah, Daniel.
In addition to that, the Midrash, I think, says that Jews who were in Egyptian homes were also spared.
Egyptian homes, which plague? Even though they did not have... Okay, excellent. Let's see. So, but this midrash seems to indicate that the Jews were spared, at least from Makat Dam. Not only were they spared, even if they were in a, if they were in a house with an Egyptian, right? An Egyptian would pour water out of the barrel, and it would be blood, and then a Jew would go get something to drink from the barrel, and it would be water. Okay? When the Egyptian said to him, but this doesn't explain how they got wealthy, the Midrash continues, even though it's not necessary for our discussion. When the Egyptian said to him, give me some water with thy own hand, and he gave it to him, it still became blood.
Oh.
Even if he said to him, let us both drink from one vessel, the Israelite would drink water, but the Egyptian would drink blood, right? Let's say they had they put two straws into the same barrel, right? And the Jew started drinking, it was water, and if the Egyptian would drink, it was blood, right? So it's an interesting situation. It was only when he had bought it from the Israelite for money that he was able to drink water, and this is how the Israelites became rich. By the way, which also is interesting because it also explains maybe how the Israelites, we know that when the Israelites left Egypt, they took stuff from the Egyptians, but now we also know that now that they take stuff, they also may have been saving up all this money that they were paid for water when Makat Dam came around.
Didn't they take the stuff to 3 days of darkness, mostly?
Yeah, correct. But here also we're seeing that they got stuff, they got paid, at least according to the Midrash, right? They got paid for the water that they would sell to the Egyptians so the Egyptians could have something to drink during Makat Dam. So here we have a hint. It's not foolproof because it only talks about Makat Dam, right? We have a hint that the Israelites were not affected during Makat Dam, and maybe they were also not affected during the other plagues, while the Egyptians were affected. Okay? This is a hint, but we have an explicit statement to this effect by the Rambam. Let's go to page 5. The Rambam is discussing, this is the Rambam's commentary on Pirkei Avot, right? Ethics of Our Fathers. The Rambam, Maimonides, wrote a commentary on it. And the Mishnah that we're going to study now is on the top line, sort of towards the end of the line. Asara nisim naasu laavotenu b'mitzrayim. There were 10 miracles which were performed to our forefathers in Egypt. But the Midrash does not tell us what those 10 miracles were. Okay?
Is that from the Haggadah?
This is the Haggadah has this similar text. Correct,
not
exactly.
Not connected to the Makot?
So we'll see. What were the...
Because it's a Sarah.
Right, so what were the... So Shula's onto something, right? We have 10 miracles were done for the Hebrews in Mitzrayim. Are they connected to the Makot? It seems like an obvious connection. And that is, in fact, what the Rambam says. You see, I bracketed it where the Gimel is. Okay, everyone see that? Anyone not see that? Asarani sim nasu lavotenu b'mitzrayim v'asaral hayam. There were 10 miracles wrought for our forefathers in Egypt, and 10 while they were crossing the sea. Aval ha'asarani sim shenasu lavotenu b'mitzrayim haim. What are the 10 miracles done for our forefathers in Egypt? Hinatzlam min ha'eser makot. Salvation from or protection against the 10 commandments. So, that was an interesting slip. Protection against the makot, the 10 makot, right? The Hebrews were not affected by the makot. And now the question is, you have to prove this, right? Rambam, you can't just stake this claim, right? The Heyot Kol Makah, flip the page, turn the page to page 6. Heyot Kol Makah Umakah Miyuchedet B'Mitzrayim V'lo B'Yisrael. Each of the Makot, each and every one of them, was specifically and only against the Egyptians and not the Hebrews. Ve'eluhem nisim below safek. That's definitely a miracle, right? Because when you have hail and the blood and all the various makot where animals are dying and crops are being destroyed and people are dying and none, it seems like it's a natural disaster, right? And none of it affects the Jews, says the Rambam, that for sure, right? Ve'eluhem nisim b'lo safek. That is that's certainly a miracle.
So when it was choshech,
right? It was not choshech for Bnei Israel, correct. Now, how does the Rambam prove this? He tries to. Let's see what he says. Ulashon ha-Torah b'chol makah u-makah mehem. And we have proof for every single of the makot, for every single of the 10 plagues. Explicit verses in the Torah, says the Rambam, that prove to us that Bnei Yisrael were not affected by the makot. Shevi HaKadosh Baruch Hu al ha-mitrim bilvad, that were brought only against the Egyptians. Milvad makat hakinim shelo bi'erze. The one exception we don't have explicit proof is lice, where there's nothing in the text that can prove that the Jews, the Hebrews, were spared. Ella shehu yadua shelo anash Yisrael. That we know by way of tradition, right? We have a mesorah, a kabbalah, an accepted tradition that the Jews were not affected by the Makot, even though there's no proof about Kinim, we assume that the same is true about Kinim as well. So what are the proofs? Here we go. Ela shu yadua shlo anash Yisrael, aval hayu nimtzaim etzlam velo hayu mitzarim. The lice were there, but didn't bug the Jews, didn't bother them. V'chein beiruach hachamim, and this is also what the Chachamim say. We're going to get back. Now, by the way, there's a footnote. This is really interesting. The footnote here on the bottom of page 6, I have it bracketed. It says, V'chein yomar gam harav ha-me'iri. This is true. I checked this. The Me'iri, another medieval commentary on the Talmud, and on he wrote a commentary on Avot, says the exact same thing the Rambam does, that the Jews, the Hebrews, were spared entirely from the Makot. Zulat makat kinim shepireish haTalmud shehayu nimtzaim etzlam, aval lo hayu mezikin otam klal, except for lice that the Talmud explains were there. I guess the Jews were affected or afflicted with lice, but it didn't bother them. V'gam haRashbatz kotev benidun zeh, another commentary writes, v'chein pirshu razal, and this is what our rabbis explained. The problem is the following: V'Rav Kasher, Rav Menachem Mendel Kasher, who we've studied some of his work before, he compiled an important collection of midrashim on most of the Torah. He wrote this, Omer al zeh b'Torah Shlema, in his work called Torah Shlema, Ein zecher la zeh b'Talmud v'lo yadua mikoro. That the commentaries say it's written in the Talmud that there was lice amongst the Hebrews, but it did not bother them? And the rabbis say that we saw this in the Talmud? As far as Rabbi Nachum Mendel Kasher is concerned, we don't have such a source. We don't have it in any of our Talmud, nor do we have it in any of our Midrashim. Lo yadua mikoro. Ulam, however, the editor of this commentary says, Ein kol safek sha'avu divrehem mimikor ne'eman, Me'ezeh midrash shena'ala mimenu. That's possible that those rabbis saw a midrash that said that, but we've lost the midrash, which is not unheard of. Right? There are things which are quoted by the Rishonim, by the medieval commentaries, and along the way, those midrashim, since they did not have many copies, or for lots of other historical reasons, got lost. In any case, that's the Me'iri's position and the Rambam's position, that all the Jews were affected by none of the plagues, including Kinim. Now, back to the top, where we can now look at the Rambam's proofs. Amar Bidam, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines from the top.
Tet.
Where this is right. Thank you, Shul. It's a little tet. Amar Bidam, it says regarding blood. V'lo yachlu mitzrayim lishtot mayim min hayor. Now, what does lo yachlu mitzrayim lishtot min hayor mean?
Amitzrim?
No, well, come on now, Shula. No cheating. What does it mean?
Mitzrayim, if you were like the Egypt.
Now, how does the Rambam understand that? The Rambam understands it like Shula understands it. It doesn't mean everyone in Egypt. It means Egyptians were not able to drink from the river. Who was able to drink from the river, presumably? The Hebrews, right? So,
or the non-Egyptians.
Right, exactly. Anyone non-Egyptian. Although, I have to say that that is not, to me, it's not a clear proof, because it doesn't say Mitzrim were unable to drink. It says Mitzrayim. No one in Egypt was able to drink water. That's how I read it. That's not how the Rambam reads it. But I'm not alone. We'll get back to that in a minute. Ra'ya she'nezek haya masigo tam levadam. Proof, says the Rambam, that the harm was only to the Egyptians. V'amar b'tzfardim, what about the frogs? Uvo v'veitecha uvachader mishkavcha. These svardim, Moshe says to Paro, will come into your house and into your bedroom. Uvicha uva'amcha uvichol avadecha ya'alu hatzfardim. And in you and in your nation, all of your servants, there will be svardim. Again, Rambam says that proves it was only to the Egyptians.
Weren't we servants?
Right, we could make another argument. Exactly, Daniel. Vamar ba'arov, wild animals. Vifleita bayomahu et Eretz Goshen. There's explicit, right? I will separate out Eretz Goshen from this plague. Eretz Goshen is where the Jews lived. So that's an explicit statement that the people in Goshen, which is where the Jews were living, were excluded. Vamar ba'dever, this is the dying, right? The animal death. So there we have another explicit verse. That's much more explicit that none of the cattle owned by the Jews were died. V'amar b'shchin boils ki haya shchin b'chartumim uv'chol Mitzrayim. Back to the same problem that the boils were on the magicians and all of Egypt, which the Rambam seems to understand as all of the Egyptians. V'amar b'barad. What about hail? Rak be'eretz Goshen asher sham b'nei Yisrael lo haya barad. More explicit that the Jews. So we have a little back and forth. Some of the psukim that the Rambam marshals are very clear, very clearly excluding the Jews from the plagues. Some of them are not so clear. Vamar be'arbe, this is the locust. Vayal ha'arbe al kol eretz Mitzrayim. Again, the Rambam says that must only mean Eretz Mitzrayim must only mean the Egyptians. Vamar b'choshech, darkness. Ulechol b'nei Yisrael haya or b'moshe rotam. The Jews had light. V'chein makat b'charot. And the same as we know, as Sunny mentioned, when it comes to the plague of the firstborn. Okay, so there it is. The Rambam is clear as day in his view. And not only it's his view, he says, I have psukim, right, verses in the Bible to prove that the Egyptians were harmed by the Makot, but not the Jews.
So what's special to the Kenim?
Okay. Why the Kenim? I don't know about that. I don't know. That's a good question. I'm not sure why there's nothing explicit about the Kenim. That does throw a little bit of a monkey wrench in the Rambam's...
Kenim
are the lice.
Well, the kids are bringing from camp.
Yes. Good.
You have to have
the word. Have them
now.
Yes.
It is a sound explanation.
For what?
People at certain diet, they have a natural protection from being beaten by certain...
Oh, interesting.
And it is some suggestion that Jewish diet included a lot of garlic. And this is one of the archaeological discovery from certain writing in Egypt, that Hebrew or
yes.
Semites, they definitely kept
right.
separate type of diet from Egyptian, which is understandable. The people came from the shepherds, and they just used different...
Right, okay.
We can see here in America for 3-4 generations back from...
Fascinating.
Europe, that we are keeping...
our own diet, right. That's
diet.
A great question. Point. Let me just make one comment before you go on. The question, though, is not why the Jews would not have been affected by Kenim, but why is there no verse... To prove it. Meaning the Rambam says for 9 out of 10 plagues, there's a verse that he considers explicit, but there's no verse that he's able to use for Kenim. That's the question.
indirect.
And you're saying because it's obvious.
We do remember, no, indirect the case we do have. We do remember that Yosef, he had a separate table from all Egyptians.
Yeah.
We learn that that him and then when his brothers came to feast, they were feasting away from Egyptians.
Right.
And now we can see they feasted away from separately from Egyptians. They probably didn't serve the food what they used to, knowing that insects could be repelled from certain smell. And I don't know how many people at this table eat garlic, but definitely the garlic get off your skin.
Right. That's interesting. Okay, thank you. Fascinating. Okay, let's look. Oh, yes, Sonny. And then we're going to go on to a different view.
But you're talking about the 10 plagues. Nowhere among the 10 plagues are vampires.
Are vampires.
Right, if you have the garlic.
Garlic, right. Okay, now let's look at a different position in this whole thing. And this position is that of the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra is a classic commentary on the Torah. He is published in all the classic Mikraot Gedolot versions of the Torah, and he was born in 1089 and died in 1167, and he was of Spanish descent. Okay, and again, he wrote a number of things, and one of them was a commentary on the Torah, and here I have it for you regarding his view of the Makot. And he doesn't only provide a view, he also provides a defense of his view and an overall way to read the Torah. So we're not only going to see a local issue solved, according to Ibn Ezra, we're also going to learn his derech of Parshanut, right? His particular approach, or one of his tools that he uses to engage in Parshanut. So let's see it. This is on page number one, where this is he's commenting on Perek Zion Pasuk Chaf Dalid, chapter 7, verse 24. I'll read it for you. It's in the top section. By the way, this comes from a great project, which is the translation of the Mikraot Gedolot into English. The Mikraot Gedolot is this classic printing of the Torah, with Rashi, Rashbam, Ramban, Ibn Ezra, right, the commentaries around the side of the page, much like you see it here, but all in Hebrew. And over the last few years, large chunks of it have been translated into English. It's really a great publication. And so the Pasuk says, we're at Pasuk Chaf Dalet on top, Vayachperu kol Mitzrayim sivivot hayor mayim lishtot, Kilo yachlu lishtot mimei hayor. Right? Once the plague of blood came, and all the Egyptians had to dig round about the Nile for drinking water, because they could not drink the water of the Nile. Commenting on the word vayachperu, right, that the Egyptians had to dig, the Ibn Ezra, which you have there bracketed on the bottom, says as follows. Many people say that in the hands of an Egyptian, the water was as red as blood, but it turned clear in the hand of the Israelite. Who are those people? Who says that?
Many people say.
We read the Midrash that said that, and we read the Rambam that said that, and the Meiri that said that, right? Many people say that in the hands of the Egyptian, those many people, right, they say that in the hands of the Egyptian, the water was red as blood, but it turned clear in the hands of the Israelite, okay? If so, then the Ibn Ezra asks a very good question. If so, why doesn't the Torah mention this phenomenon? Mm-hmm. Meaning, the Ibn Ezra has a simple approach. When there's a miracle, the Torah tells you there's a miracle. If the Torah doesn't tell you there's a miracle, there's no miracle. So if there was a miracle, like the Midrash says, he had one barrel of water. You stuck a straw in, if you're a Hebrew, it was water. If you stuck a straw in and you were Egyptian, it was blood. That's a miracle. Why doesn't the Torah say it? Why would the Torah want to hide miracles? There are other Rishonim who disagree with this, who say we try to limit miracles. But if it actually happened, the Torah should say it happened. If so, why doesn't the Torah mention this phenomenon? Or this is, by the way, this is a great question on a lot of Midrashic literature. Right? If the Midrash is going to claim that all these miracles happened, why doesn't the Torah tell us? I wonder what the Ibn Ezra did in the Haggadah. Right? We have the Haggadah that says, no, there weren't 10 plagues. They were, right? It multiplies them and multiplies them and multiplies them. Maybe the Ibn Ezra skipped that part of the Haggadah. I don't know, because if the Torah doesn't say it, it wasn't a miracle. If so, why doesn't the Torah mention this phenomenon? In my opinion, the plague of blood, frogs, and lice all affected both the Egyptians and the Hebrews. Interesting, right? The Rambam was certain that none of the plagues affected the Hebrews. Says the Ibn Ezra, blood, frogs, and lice. Why those out of all the others? Why does he say that these affected the Hebrews and not the others? Right? He says, here's his answer, we must pursue the meaning of the text. Just, if you want to understand what happened, just read the text.
Yeah, but there was something. They said that so only the Yeor was bloody, and what kind of water they had around
That's where the water came from. All the water came from the Yeor.
So when they chafru, when they did,
maybe a underground
was it
wells,
clear water?
That,
why would
it
they
sounds,
take a trouble to dig if it's...
Correct. It sounds like it was only the Yeor.
There are
psukim which may also lead us to say that all of the water in Egypt, other psukim, because it says, if you look in verse 21, Vahadaga asher b'yor meta, Vayivasha yor, velo yachlu mitraim, l'shtop mayim in yor, vayihi hadam b'chol eretz mitraim.
So why did they dig there?
So it seems like the most basic understanding is, you're right, it was only the Yor, and they were digging, trying to find subterranean water, right, in order to drink. But the Ibn Ezra says a good point. We must pursue the meaning of the text. These plagues did lit us. So then the question is, why were the Jews afflicted by blood, frogs, and lice? He says, these plagues did little damage. So what's that? Meaning,
drink.
Yeah, but it didn't last that long, right? But for the plague of swarms, which was severe, God separated the Egyptians and the Israelites. Similarly with the hail and the pestilence on account of the cattle, though not with the boils and with the locusts that destroyed the crops, for they were leaving Egypt anyway. Ibn Ezra has a very, very simple way of looking at this. When it says the Jews were saved, those are explicit psukim, which we saw the Rambam says that in Eretz Goshen, some of the plagues did not hit. But if this text doesn't explicitly say the Jews were saved, why would we assume the Jews were saved? Because again, the Ibn Ezra works on an operating principle. If there was a miracle, the Torah would have said it was a miracle. Right? That's one of the goals of the Torah, especially in this case, is to show God's power. So why would we hide God's power? So if there's a miracle, let's say it. Why were the Jews not affected by some? Because some were just too severe and they would have hurt the Israelites. And others, which would presumably also have hurt the Israelites, which they were affected by then they were on their way out. It was going to be a short-term inconvenience. And so God did not spare the Jewish people from those plagues. In short, just as the Egyptians had to dig for drinking water, so did the Hebrews. Daniel.
Ibn Ezra's explanation, or his canon of interpretation, almost seems to then delegitimize, you know, Hashem's glory and power, right? Saying, I mean, it's the same thing that the Chartumim and Paro and his advisors said right at the beginning. It's no big deal. It's an inconvenience.
Right.
We can do this too. We can make blood.
So I don't think he's saying that God could not have spared, but it's not that the Ibn Ezra is denying God's power. It's God who's denying his power. I mean, why didn't God, if God wanted us to think that he spared the Hebrews, he should have written it. Right? All the Ibn Ezra is saying, I'm just reading the Psukim. The Psukim say the Jews were spared from these. It doesn't say they were spared from the others, so why should I assume they were?
Right, but his interpretation is that they were kind of insignificant, right?
No, they were short-term. Yeah, they were. They were. I mean, you said they were that way for the Egyptians too. That's a good point. Yeah, but that's a fair point. They were not long-term, and we know we have this notion that the plagues got more and more severe as they went on. So these early ones, Dan, Sephardea, and Kenan, the first three, Datsach, as we refer to them in the Haggadah, they were of limited, effect, limited damage, right? Right.
Besides, we know that if it rains in Katy, it might not rain in Ireland.
Right.
So I could understand that some plagues did not hit the Jews. They were in Goshen, not in other parts.
It's understandable if we look at them as natural phenomena, but if we look at them as plagues that God brought...
So God could decide.
Oh, of course he could. Oh, yes, of course he could. But now the question becomes this, why? Meaning, why, if the Ibn Ezra is right, why would the Jews not be spared from all of the plagues? Now let's assume the Ibn Ezra is correct. And the way he says it's half and half. They were afflicted by half, and they were saved. They were spared from half. Why did the Jews deserve to be afflicted by half the plagues? Even though three of them were the most gentle, and the two, you know, who cares, were leaving anyway. But why at all? Why would they have to suffer at all?
So they can leave. They were supposed to be in Egypt much longer.
No, say, why did the Jews have to be afflicted?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
By the plagues.
Because it's like, you know, the fire of the crucible. You know, they have to be refined more.
They have, okay. So one answer, right. Okay, so Danielle is bringing up an interesting answer, that the plagues were not only to punish the Egyptians or to bring the Egyptians to a recognition of God's omnipotence, but also the Jews. And so God said, okay, I need to teach the Jews a lesson, but they're not as bad as the Egyptians, so I'm going to hit the Egyptians with all ten, and I'm only going to hit the Israelites with the first three, which are not so bad, and the last two, of course, are leaving anyway, so they'll learn their lesson, but they'll learn their lesson in a much less severe manner than the Egyptians did. I think that's a reasonable way to look at this. Any other suggestions? Sonny?
Well, I think Donnell hit on something when he said that at the beginning when Moses came to Pharaoh and Pharaoh called his magicians and his sorcerers and they did the same, created the same plagues. Maybe that had something to do with...
So the Jews also need a little bit of convincing. Yeah. It could be. Another way to look at this is we have a general statement, which Rashi says and others say, Olam kiminhago noheg. That really what it means is when there's something that bad that happens, sometimes innocent people are going to be swept away in it also. Unless God specifically steps in and does a miracle, right? There's a tornado coming. And it should destroy 20 houses on the block. And when all is said and done, there's one house still standing because God stepped in. So maybe that's what's happening here too. Olam kiminhago noheg. Yeah, it's true that the Jews, the default position is everyone in Egypt, Egyptian or otherwise, are going to be affected by the plagues unless God specifically steps in to stop it. Why did God specifically step in to stop it? This is not about teaching the Jews a lesson. They were already ready to go. They had full faith in God. They didn't need any education, as Daniel suggested. But they were just caught up in the whirlwind, right? They were caught up in the whirlwind. But God spared them from the five most severe plagues. I think there are two different ways to look at that. We'll just look at one other thing, which is very interesting. This notion of the Jews being affected by the first three plagues also helps us understand something that Paro does. Okay? We know, according to Ibn Ezra, that the Jews were afflicted by the first three plagues. They were not afflicted by Arov. Right? They were not afflicted by the fourth plague. Right? And what right, which was the swarm of insects, right? Let's look what happens. Look on page 4. Let's look at verse 20, right in the middle section, right in the middle of the page. Vayas Hashem kein vayavo arov kaved. Beta paro ubeit avadav uvechol eretz mitzrayim tishachet haaretz mipnei haarov. Right, there's going to be, everyone's going to be destroyed. Okay? What happens? We know that in the previous verse it said, V'samti pidut ben ami uven amecha l'machar yeot hazeh. I will make a distinction between my people and your people. Meaning, tomorrow's plague that's coming, the Jews aren't going to be afflicted. Right, here we have an explicit statement. Right, that's in Pasuk 19. Right in the middle. The text is right in the middle. Pasuk 19, tomorrow's plague will not affect the Jews, and then God brings the Arov. This is the, according to the Ibn Ezra, let's remember who we're talking about. According to the Ibn Ezra, this is the first time the Jews were spared. Look what happens next in verse 21. Vayikra paro el Moshe ula Aaron, vayomer l'chu zivchu l'alohechem ba'aretz. You wanted to go bring sacrifices to God in Egypt? Okay, up until now I didn't let you go. Now I'm going to let you go. Why all of a sudden now? Why? How come not after Dam, Sephardea, Kenan? Why only after Arov? So one answer is, well, those first three weren't so bad, as we already noted, according to Ibn Ezra. But Ibn Ezra himself gives an answer, which is on the right-hand column towards the bottom. Paro saw that God had made a distinction between the Israelites and the Egyptians. He feared to do them any evil. He realized that he had to let them go and sacrifice lest he be struck by pestilence. You see that he now gives them permission to sacrifice it in the land. So here's another beautiful proof by the Ibn Ezra. Up until now, everyone's being affected. The Jews, the Hebrews. Paro's not convinced that God is necessarily on the side of the Hebrews. But now, when the Jews are spared the fourth plague, Paro begins to wisen up and say, hold on a second. Maybe this God is onto something. Right? And so he throws them a bone, right? And lets them go offer sacrifices in the land, in Mitzrayim. So that's the answer. Why now? Why now? Because Paro finally realized that the Egyptians are being singled out. Which is again, right, the Ibn Ezra used this change of position by Paro to sort of strengthen his view. That up until that point, the Jews were afflicted by all of the Makot. So we have a classic Machloket Rishonim here, right? The Ibn Ezra says it's five and five. The Jews were afflicted by five and spared from five. The Midrash at least tells us that the Jews were spared from Dam. The Ibn and the Rambam and the Meiri says the Jews were spared by all of them. Both the Rambam and the Meiri use verses in the Torah to prove their point. So let's take a poll. Who made a more convincing case? The Rambam or the Ibn Ezra? Raise your hand if you think the Rambam made a more convincing case and the Jews were spared from all the plagues.
No.
Spared from all the plagues. Okay, 4, 5. And raise your hand if you think the Ibn Ezra makes a more convincing case. We have a split decision. 5 against 5. I didn't vote. I'm not going to. No, that's too much pressure. I can't handle that pressure. Okay. All right, everyone. Todah rabah. Thank you for coming. Have a wonderful day.